I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to this month's episode of Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I am your greasy thug for this week, Bob Mackey. That's my name, I think. And who else is here with me today?
Here and queer, Henry Gilbert.
That's right. I'm getting used to it. And who else is here? Special guest, our first time third guest on Talk to the Audience. We've never had a third guest before, or a third person on the mic.
Feeling very bad for Nina Matsumoto apologizing for something, Matthew J.
What?
We're gonna get to her comment.
The great Nina. Okay, yes.
Made me feel bad.
There's a few Nina comments on this, but yes, by the way, this is our third podcast recording in a row, which is why I forgot my name halfway through. I promise you we will pick up the energy in a second here. So let's talk about some news for this month. By the way, in case you're new to the network, welcome and thank you. This is our community podcast. Every month we talk about news in the Simpsons world, in the Simpsons extended universe, and news going on with us. And we also use this as an opportunity to answer questions and comments. So that's what this is for. As for news, there's not a lot going on this time.
Not so much. You know, off the top of my head, I recall that Mike Reese, you know, he put his book out, which we were part of that Simpsons news. And fortunately, nobody's like stepped in shit in the Simpsons world since then. On a kind of sad note, that Al Jean's father passed away this year.
Yeah.
Or this month, which, you know, if it's, I never knew the man, but I definitely had heard enough stories about him on the commentaries and him talk. Even when he was saying RIP to my father, he showed a picture of Gene's Hardware,
which
his father had run for 50 years.
And that's where Al Jean worked. And in fact, I believe his father built the scary clown bed that is referenced.
No, that's Mike Reese's dad.
Oh, Mike Reese's dad. Yeah, Mike Reese's dad is a doctor. He should not be building anything.
Yes.
I'm sure he inspired many buffoonish things Homer has done throughout the years.
I'm sure. But yes, RIP to Al Jean's dad, of course. And as for us, we are on the brink of our LA trip. We'll be going in about a week or so. Mm-hmm. So we'll be doing lots of cool stuff there. Make sure you're following us on Twitter and Instagram for me. I'll be tweeting a lot of pictures and we're podcasting with great, cool people. So I'm looking forward to it. And finally meeting the Everything's Coming Up Simpsons ladies.
Yeah, Allie and Julia, this wouldn't be happening if they hadn't just offered us on Twitter to hang out record podcasts together. And I'm looking forward to seeing what a real live LA podcast studio looks like what did they do different or better or even worse than what we do? I'm curious to see the difference.
I was just in Los Angeles and I want to make a recommendation, which is also Simpsons related.
What, Five Guys? Gotta go to Five Guys.
Go to Five Guys.
Oh no, In and Out. So In and Out.
We have In and Out here. One of the restaurant reviews Bill Oakley recently did got me to go to Hi Ho Burger in Santa Monica. It is fantastic. And get the pickles. They have pickles as a side that they make there, and they're very good.
All right, I'm going to try this. I don't think Bob might be up for Hi Ho Burger.
I don't think they have a veggie burger option.
Hi No Burger for
they
me.
They might, but I doubt it.
But,
You mentioned Bill Oakley. He has exploded as an Instagram fast food reviewer.
Yeah.
That's great.
They have been so cute. One of my favorites of his recent ones was him getting, he went to IHOP, hate even saying that, but, and the funniest bit is he stops in the middle because his kids are laughing as he's doing it, and then he makes the kids record the rest of it and read off his notes.
That's great. I also like how he came around on Arby's. He's like, Arby's isn't bad. We just make fun of it because its name is weird. It's
I appreciate
a funny name.
That. So yeah. I have been an Arby's defender my entire life, and I'm so glad he said that, because Arby's, a big beef cheddar. No, regular beef and cheddar at Arby's. The big one's a bit much. A regular beef and cheddar at Arby's, not quite on my fast food Mount Rushmore, but it is real high up on the list.
It's a it's a good change from like a burger or a chicken sandwich or whatever.
Yeah,
it's something different.
I gotta say, everyone is sick of me telling stories about my hometown, but I grew up in the town with the first Arby's.
Whoa. Oh, really?
So, like in the birthplace of Arby's, and boy, did I eat a lot of Arby's growing up. So, no more Arby's for me. It's very, very salty.
You're like Mitch and Dunkin' Donuts.
I loved his point in the video about like, well, Arb is a funny word. Mm-hmm. So, even though there are many more disgusting restaurants, fast food chains and Arby's, it just becomes the joke. And he even kind of took responsibility for it. He put in clips from The Simpsons of like, put it, it's Arby's problem now.
You let Arby's deal with it.
Let Arby's deal with it.
It's the same as like Brussels sprouts. They were just told us by cartoons they're gross. And then you get older and you eat them when you made them yourself. And you're like, oh, these are actually fantastic.
I think all of those jokes came from an era in which all vegetables came out of a can.
Yeah.
And they were put there 2 months earlier. So everyone hated vegetables. But now you can go to any grocery store and get any vegetable you want fresh, and now vegetables are good because you can just prepare them the way you like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, another Simpsons thing that happened to me just this week is Moe's Irregular Oreos. I had a similar experience where CVS sold me 4-month expired Oreos, and were very shitty about me bringing them back. Wow. So fuck you, CVS.
Man, that's disgusting.
Yeah, they were real shitty about it. But I contacted, you know who I contacted? The Oreo Twitter, and they got back to me way quicker than CVS
Man,
did.
Man, corporate brands on Twitter are often very communicative for you. So
a lot of their DMs are open, so go complain.
So
slide into those DMs.
Do not put any dick pics towards the Oreo company. They do not welcome them. So other news, don't forget about our live show. I think we need to make a promo for this or something, but that'll be happening soon. But
we're going to post up.
July 28th at the Piano Fight Bar in San Francisco at 5:30. We're doing our fourth live show. Topic is TBD, but I believe we're just going to be doing an episode of the show. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we'll be revisiting an older topic or maybe doing an episode from the future of the show. Who knows? But it's undecided right now.
But it's going to be lots of fun. If you haven't been to the previous shows at the Piano Fight Bar, it is really close to the Powell Street Station in
it's a stone's throw.
It's easy to get to from public transit or if you've got a car, but it's in the beautiful Bay Area still. You know, people have asked like, oh, could you do a show here? Could you do a show here? Like, look, I would love for us to do shows elsewhere, but it's just that we got to reach out to somebody first about that and do a lot more planning, and kind of all of our planning energy has gone into this next live show or our LA trip or preparing for the next LA trip. Like, we're almost a month ahead on Simpsons recordings.
We're really far ahead. Yeah. But I have to
do what Paul F. Tompkins used to do.
What did he do?
He would tell them, hey, do you want me to come there and make a Facebook group and get, was it 200 people to say they will buy tickets? I will fly there.
I think Facebook changed how all of that works. So he stopped doing that at a certain point.
Yeah.
Well, and he would keep, I think I heard it was like the PFT 300, and I think he stopped doing it because when the day finally came, lots of people didn't show up. He's like, you guys said you would. You know, like, oh, I had a problem. I couldn't go here that day.
But I think for our live shows, I'm stuck in the mindset of like maybe perhaps trying too hard in that. So if you're a comedian, you do a lot of your same material on the road at various different places. If you're a band, you play a lot of the same songs at various different places. Like, why can't we revisit Camp Krusty or something like that? Like, would that feel wrong to you? I think it would be fun.
But I mean, hey, if you've got opinions, why not let us know in the comments here, too?
I'd like to know.
We read our Patreon comments very closely, as we do on this show, but
And we hope we see you there. It's July 28th at 5:30 at Piano Fight. As always, we always hang out afterwards to talk to people and hang out and drink and stuff. So it's a real fun way to meet all of our fans. And we've seen a lot of the same people there a bunch. And in fact, like three of our guests came to the second show. So we've made a lot of great friends and future guests from going to the show. And
really maybe nice
one of them could be you. And also, one last thing. We are only $500 away from our next mini-series, and that will be, you will vote on it, you the patrons. And I will say, I don't like begging for money very much, but if you want us to do this, if half of our patrons are like, God, if a fourth of our patrons gave an extra dollar, we would have another 13 episodes to make for you. So
that's simple math. Folks, yeah, it's just how it works out. Yeah, we reached the end of season one of Futurama, and we did our deleted scenes thing too, so we are looking to start the next one. But that's, we do at our current level, we do one miniseries a year. If we can reach another level, it kind of affords us the ability to, it was time consuming to do a third weekly podcast for 3 months there. And so I loved doing it, but we kind of need to reach a certain level of money just to make it like, okay, this is worth the time as well.
Yeah, bring us Talking Clone High. I'm excited.
If the people want it, we will give it to them. But yes, I would say consider like upping your pledge by a buck if you can do it. If enough people do that, we'll have 500 easy. But if you can't do it, don't worry about it. But I think that's a very simple way to reach that next goal. And we'll be more than happy to produce whatever series you want us to when we hit that goal. I think we'll hit it naturally. We sort of have plateaued this month. We have not lost any money, but it's been a little bit slower as we're trying to find, you know, a bigger audience. So like, get the word out there about Talking Simpsons. Tell your friends about all of our shows, including What a Cartoon.
Mm-hmm. And also, I guess One more thing to remind you guys, if you haven't listened to it yet, we did do our a quick little anniversary podcast of just like a thank you, because it has been now over a year since we've launched this. It's amazing. It's been a whole year.
Yeah, this is actually, I think this is our 12th Talk to the Audience, mm-hmm. because we did one in July. That was our first one of last year. So yeah, it's been, can you imagine, like we were doing Talking Critic a year ago, and it feels like 1,000 years ago.
It really does.
We started it a year ago. I can't believe that.
And then we gave ourselves like 24 episode thing instead of a 13 episode thing too.
We proved ourselves, I think, and that was a lot of work. But man, I'm so happy we have that as something that we can offer people on the Patreon. So yes, that's all the news. Let's get into comments here. We'll also have Matt on board to read a few of these. So let's go. I'll go first. This is all for Bart on the Road. And Turd Sampson says, I've been to Knoxville twice now. The first time was specifically because of this episode and wanting to see the Sun Sphere for myself. The Sun Sphere is still functional, and you can take an elevator up to an observation deck / exhibit that wraps around the whole thing. There were also other floors. I am pretty sure there was commercial rental space available on some of them, and there were posters advertising a night / dance club on one of them. The Sun Sphere itself overlooks World's Fair Park, where there is also an amphitheater left over from the World's Fair. And inside the lobby of a hotel nearby was the world's largest Rubik's Cube that was also from the World's Fair. And
that,
yes,
that was a real thing. I thought that was a joke in the episode.
It's
that
so stupid. It sounds like a joke, but I guess it's real. And that amphitheater was like the one other thing they didn't tear down, because it set some record for Tennessee, like the biggest blank in this area, the biggest amphitheater. So I gotta say, if you want to get laid, take your date to the club in the Sun Sphere and you can just bed her on a pile of soiled wigs.
Apparently, in the recent years, Knoxville spent the money to renovate that Sun Sphere and make it look a little better, just because it is kind of the pride of Knoxville.
More modern wigs.
So Joe Quigley says, just for clarification, Skinner probably legally couldn't leave the school open without being present. Most schools, in my experience, require that an administrator always be in the building when the kids are in, although sometimes those rules get fudged. This made me realize Skinner is the only administrator at the school. It's kind of weird in retrospect that the school superintendent and groundskeeper of the school are relatively fleshed out characters, but they've never made an assistant principal. No vice principal, nothing.
That is really true, because when we see the PTA disbands, they're all striking against Skinner, and like Superintendent Chalmers and Leopold are the only members of the administration who aren't teachers, who are not in that union. So yeah, I guess he would be the only member of the administration in the school. So I think Joe was right. Matt, let's read this Nina one.
Nina Matsumoto says, I never knew reclining your seat in the plane is considered a social taboo until a few months ago when I saw a thread about it on Twitter. No one ever told me, and I'd never seen anyone complain about it before. I don't care if the person in front of me reclines. In fact, it's helpful sometimes because it brings the in-flight entertainment screen closer to my face. But then I'm a shorty short who always has plenty of leg room. I've been conscious about it ever since I saw that thread, though, and now I don't do it anymore and feel bad about all the times I have. Yes, that is, you have small person privilege, and we're all big men.
I know. I mean, we hung out with Nina, and she's very small, and I wish I could become Nina's smallness when I am on a plane, just so I can, like, I want to stretch my legs out. But it, like, if you're over, like, 5'9", any plane is hell.
I have fantasies about being able to change my height for that. Like, I want to be able to shrink on planes, and I want to be able to shrink. I want, like, Ant-Man, the ability to shrink my car, because parking sucks.
You just put it in your pocket.
Put it in my pocket. Yeah. Go into a bar and just go and get drunk and then get back in my car.
As Americans get fatter, those seats get smaller, which is just not useful to us fat Americans.
Did you see those fucking standing seats? Those roller coaster seats? At some trade show, I don't know what it was, but it looked like it was on like a show floor. They were showing a concept for standing plane seats, which are just fucking roller coaster seats. You know the ones you like Six Flags, you stand in and put the thing down?
They should attach catheters to people and then just lock them into those seats for the entirety of the flight.
What if we all just fucking kill ourselves? Yeah. Also, what if this life is horrible and this world sucks and we're in hell?
I mean, and you'll pay for that privilege to be like, hey, do you want the better catheter? That's $25 more.
We'll give you the painful one.
This one's been cleaned.
But yeah, I mean, I don't really think it's an act of malice when a seat is reclined in front of me. Just kind of groan and be like, this is my life for the next 3 or 4 hours or whatever.
But I get grumpy at it for sure.
Yeah, but I'm glad.
Like, I don't think people realize, I don't think it counts as selfish unless you've been told this and can continue to do it, then it's selfish because you know you're hurting someone.
I'm glad us talls taught the shorties a lesson finally to not recline your seat. But thank you, Nina, for being thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
Our next episode is 22 short films about Springfield. And Wise Blood says, White Castle burgers are actually steamed. They place the meat over soaked onions, and as the onions cook, the meat is cooked with the steam from the onions. So there you go. So maybe Krusty Burger has steams their hams too. Who knows? Wait, maybe. No, they're obviously grilled.
Grilled. The steamed, we just talked about how shit White Castle is in that Freakazoid, What a Cartoon, because that's where he got all those burgers from.
A sack of like 30 burgers. But I want to say that like some burger places and some like fake burgers will have like the fake grill marks on them.
Like a Sharpie. They just draw them. I think Burger King
it's
used
like
to
food
do
coloring
that.
Or whatever.
And liquid smoke on top of it too.
Like,
see, this tastes like you're getting
I think
carcinogenic
they also
smoke.
Did that. Burger King has done every sin that a fast food restaurant can do. And I think they used to put the fake grill marks on it before they really, in like the late 90s, they pushed the like
flame broil.
Burger King used to be higher up on my fast food burger chain, and now they're only above McDonald's.
Oh my god, they're above McDonald's. What kind of fucked up list is that?
I would have a McDonald's burger last.
Oh my gosh,
no, those McDonald's are all the McDonald's burgers are all bread. It's all buns.
It's like an onion loaf.
Yeah,
no way. No, you're ordering the wrong burgers, man.
Well, I'm not a Big Mac fan. Either,
try that. So. Oh no! Well, actually, that is the problem with the Big Mac. It's too much bread. They put that bread in the middle.
I
get that new quarter pounder, dude. Try
what
it.
What if a burger was like a double burger? let's read up Reese's comments.
Do I have to do Henry's discontinuity alert? Why did this episode start with and end with Bart and Milhouse chucking things off of the bridge? Yet in the episode, Milhouse and his dad are in a car going somewhere. Well, what I have to assume is that throughout the day, Milhouse got picked up by his dad at some point to go somewhere and needed to use the bathroom. After using the bathroom, they went somewhere else, and then he met back up with Bart on the bridge.
I think that makes sense. Like, Milhouse was not there with Bart the entire time.
I mean, Bart also goes skateboards everywhere.
Yeah, like, Bart leaves to buy gum, right?
They both leave the bridge to buy gum.
Maybe they agree to meet up at the bridge later.
Yeah, at sundown, they'll do that. That's,
so there you go.
That's my no prize-worthy response to it.
Matthew.
Joe Hodgson says, as a kid, it used to bother me that Wiggum and the cops have no knowledge of McDonald's, but just a few segments later, Milhouse is presented with a Hamburglar comic book. Oh. As an adult, though, I don't care because it's funny. Also, I've always wondered what really tall man's day was like before Nelson laughed at him. I have to believe he was having an awful day and Nelson's insult was the last straw, or else he's just really quick to anger.
I agree. I feel like there's a lot that's not being told about really tall man in his life, where everything is a slight against him. He's just like doomed to walk this cursed earth as a very tall man.
He doesn't make much money.
It's true.
He's very poor. He can only afford like those clothes too. And he also has glasses. Like, it's just an uncomfortable experience. We talk about wishing we were as small as Nina. Like, I would think he wishes he was as tall as us instead of that. It must be a hellish existence.
So up next, Curse of the Flying Hellfish. President Zachary Adams says, also, my Burns no prize attempt. As a college grad in his 20s, from a wealthy family, Burns would have been eligible to get drafted for World War I, but might have been sent directly to officer training. If he served with the illusion of distinction, the rule of comedy allows him to be reactivated even though he was too old. Then, when he gets caught helping the enemy, they feed him to the meat grinder rather than court-martial, and he ends up in the hellfish. So, I could see that. Yeah, as we pointed out in the episode, Burns would have to be like in his early 50s during World War II, so it was strange to see him fighting. But
I like the reactivation of a World War I vet, which I guess did happen more than not. That's actually, I think that's a plot point in a couple of war films. I forget what. But yeah, it's dudes talking. Well, in the Korean War, in the Korean War drama MASH, as we found out in that Tontine episode.
Oh, right.
He's actually the major is celebrating the passing of the last of his brothers from WW1 as well.
Oh, well, okay, World War One. Damn.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. Okay. Camarena. Cameron says, I always thought Kirk and Luann were cousins who married. Every Springfielder has a Shelbyville doppelganger, it seems, and some of them are gender switched like Willie's was. Luann reminds Kirk that she is from Shelbyville in the same episode, and Shelbyville folks are fond to marriage of their cousins. It would really explain why they all look so much alike, and that Milhouse and why Milhouse is such a weirdo. Nina Matsumoto replied to that with, no joke, they made it canon in the show that they are cousins.
That explains a lot about Milhouse.
This is like season 21.
I didn't know that.
It's lore I wasn't aware of. So Matthew.
Robert Flaxman says, another thing I noticed, although Del Monte is spoken and we see the outline of the well-known logo, there's no text. Reminds me of the thing with not showing the whole channel name, etc. An odd quirk of trademark law, clearly.
Yeah, along with Chanel, they didn't show. So we just talked about the Hamburglar comic. Comic book guy is holding it, so he's covering up the H. So it's the Hamburglar.
You can say it, you can't write it out.
I believe it's the law of 10%, as they sometimes call it, where if you show, like, that's why so many times it'll just be the color, because that covers 10%. So, like, if you put Sonic the Hedgehog on there and he's green, you can just draw Sonic the Hedgehog green.
I'm doing that tonight.
And he also, I believe this is a response to himself. He says, also, Abe's helmet has 3 chevrons and 3 rockers, which officially makes him the rank of Master Sergeant. Is this from the last episode?
It's from this one.
Oh, this one, okay.
Hellfish.
Abe's helmet has 3 chevrons and 3 rockers, which officially makes him the rank of Master Sergeant. This is the highest enlisted rank in the U.S. Army, where he could still just be called Sergeant. Above it are First Sergeant, which is actually the same grade but carries more authority, and Sergeant Major. Things were presumably somewhat difficult during World War II. Things were presumably somewhat different during World War II when so many men were needed. But in today's army, you need a bare minimum of 8 years' time in service to make Master Sergeant, and usually a good deal more. I wonder what we're supposed to make of Abe's prior experience here. Answer, they probably don't think about it, but it could make a good episode.
Yeah, you have to imagine that Abe was drafted in 41 or 42 and just served his 3 years in the shit, man, before going home to be an alcoholic World War II veteran, just like all of his buddies.
Marrying a very young wife and abusing her. Up next, we have Much Apoo About Nothing. I want to point out that I'm not going to get into a lot of the comments here because I did go into them and respond to them personally on Patreon. And for the people who didn't like our take on the episode, I feel like they were not rude about it and they were trying to articulate their position politely. And ultimately, we disagreed on a lot of things, but I thank you for the feedback. Anything you want to say about this, Henry?
No, I mean, there were lots of people who said nice things as well, really complimented it for having... I mean, I do think I still believe in the episode that we covered the episode a lot. And, you know, a lot of people hadn't heard our Patreon exclusive review of Hari Kondabolu's movie. So I think like this wasn't really, we hadn't really directly talked about Apu on the show. And I felt it needed to happen at some point. And I think we were really blessed to have Shivam as a guest to explain his viewpoint.
He was a great guest and I learned a lot. And I think that there is some fear in some parts of our audience that every time Apu will come up, we will go into it in as depth of a conversation as we had on that episode. And that probably won't happen because this is a one-time case in which we had someone who could speak authoritatively on the subject and for an episode in which he is looked into as a real person for the first time. So I feel like if you thought the Apu talk was excessive, it was for a reason, and it's not going to be like that for every appearance. Of course, we'll comment on like, what do we think of this joke in 2018 or 2019? But I don't think we're going to go into as much detail as we did on Much Apu About Nothing.
Yeah, it's hard not to do it. I mean, that episode is the one to do it too, because it is all about exploring Apu. As stated by the writer of the episode, it was to make him less of a quote-unquote stereotype. And that was, it was about his background and life. So, I mean... that's the episode to have that Apu conversation. But also, like, I was honestly more worried people I would be told to not get so political about the immigration stuff, which angers me to no end. But we can't not talk about that either in today's society.
And ultimately, this is not the most important thing, but if you did not like our treatment of the episode, I like the fact that, and it surprised me, that Shivam actually likes this episode and thought it was a thoughtful treatment of Apu. He did not like a few of the jokes. He thought some of it was highly inaccurate given his own experience, but I feel like that was a genuine surprise for me that somebody who this episode and character should offend in a lot of ways, he was able to look past that and see the intent and what they were trying to do with him, which I thought was very great of Shivam to have that approach.
Yeah, I felt we were pretty fair.
Anyway,
thanks for the feedback. Thanks for the feedback, however you had it.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Henry, can you get this first comment?
Sure. Joe Hodgson says, as a dad, I find Helen Lovejoy's "Won't somebody please think of the children" line amusing. I don't think anyone is responsible for making sure television shows or other media is appropriate for my kids, unless it's a show clearly made for kids. I totally get why Oakley would inject that sentiment into the show, since The Simpsons was basically co-opted by the network and child fans into basically being a kid show, even though it was never intended to be or aired in a kid-friendly time slot. And adding that sentiment to Lovejoy makes sense to me, as she's the gossipy, judgmental wife of the local reverend and always felt like a Tipper Gore figure to me.
Oh yeah, she is like the most judgmental character on the show, I think. And yeah, she's the perfect vessel for this. And I believe someone pointed out, like I mentioned on the show, like, why did that catchphrase go away? Because Maggie Roswell left the show for a while. That's why there was no more Helen Lovejoy.
I mean, that's the same reason they killed off Maw.
Yeah.
Because, like, well, she's not around to record it.
Victor Romero says, I'm glad Shivam joined you guys for this episode. I was born and raised in Los Angeles. Hey, another shout out to LA. But my parents are from Mexico and only became legal residents after Reagan's amnesty in 1986. And yeah, it's a mind fuck to have to think. It's a mind fuck to have to thank such a garbage ass president for that. I was at the Hall of Presidents and he got applauded when he came up.
Oh, yeah.
It sucked. As a Latino, I didn't feel ostracized or excluded from entertainment such as The Simpsons. Bumblebee Man's comedy is weak compared to El Chapo in Colorado, the basis for the parody. So I'm going to try and say that in a better. El Chapulín, the basis for the parody. Chapulín, maybe. So yeah, whatever. So he's he's barely, I'm too white to say it. So he's barely even a blip on my cultural radar. However, I didn't deal with the type of harassment described by Shivam. I appreciate Shivam pointing out that some immigrants have arrived with no support network of any kind. He reminded me of the importance of accurate representation in popular media and the support that it can provide for someone adjusting to a new culture.
Yeah, I mean, despite the kind of stereotypical jokes about Apu even in that episode, I feel like the presence of David S. Cohen, who, you know, went to school with a lot of Indian students, his experience lent more to the life of Apu than any other writer could have, where it's like, here, this is the experience of a lot of my grad school friends and a lot of my peers in academia. So
yeah,
that's where he got that from.
He came to it with more insight than the other writers on staff, though. I mean, Mike Reese even jokes about in his book that it was The Simpsons has always been a very undiverse staff.
Yeah.
And I think they're trying to correct that notion now, but that was how it was then. So even when it was just all Harvard graduate white dudes, at the very least you had David Cohen, who had more experience with Indian people in his life, that he could have a more informed take on them in this.
And if you look at Sam Simon's experience, another writer on the show, like his experience was he was obsessed with 7-Eleven and convenience stores. So his only experience with Indian people was them working behind the counter, which is why he put Hank Azaria up to doing that voice at the table read, because he was just like, this is my only experience with Indian people. Of course, the guy at the counter is going to be Indian, but much different than David S. Cohen, where it's like, no, Indian people study computers and they do a lot of other things too. Allison says, thanks for the episode, guys. I really appreciate the effort you made in including an Indian American voice in this episode. She also says, I view this as a conscious work to improve upon / course correct, for example, in Homer Badman's lack of a woman's perspective. And this is Bob talking. I totally agree.
Yeah.
And we are making a concerted effort to get different voices on the show. And we're sorry for bringing Matthew on as another white guy. Yeah. Matthew, apologize to the people.
Oh, and I'm the whitest guy you could have brought, too.
No, the whitest guy I know.
I'm sorry for my whiteness.
I thought we did this just aside, too. Yeah, on Homer Badman. I do think we did a good job on that episode. I'm not ashamed of that episode,
yeah.
But I do regret in an episode all about a woman being sexually harassed that we did not have a woman, any female viewpoint in that.
It was also not a guest driven show at the time.
No.
We were locked into the three white dude podcasting scenario. But yes, we I think three episodes in a row we all have Talking Simpsons non-white male guests, so I think we're doing a good job there, and we're trying to get more diverse people, not to fill some diversity quota before you say that. It's more for, like, again, different perspectives. Like Shivan's perspective is something that we could not never have had, and we learned so much from him that we never would have known, even through research.
I think that enriches and expands the show.
But yes,
that's the thing that I just love about podcasts in general. Is it's, you know, I grew up watching too much TV, and I remember just realizing, like, oh, white men have written almost everything I've ever seen or like cared about in my life. And podcasts lets me hear people, especially because so many people who can't get a foot in whatever industry they're in, especially show business, tend to start podcasts.
Yeah,
and that helps them get seen and get them more jobs from a lot of, like, the aforementioned Allie Gertz, who is now fucking one of the editors of Mad Magazine.
Yes,
awesome.
It's great. So Allison goes on to say, it's nice to see people not digging their heels about their potential life blind spots and use their platform to amplify people of color's voices and diverse perspectives, rather than say, that's enough, people of color, be happy for the scraps. I don't think that Talking Simpsons needs to quote-unquote take a break from racial issues. That's nice that it's even an option for some people. As it stands, I'm traveling right now throughout Frankfurt, Singapore, and Tokyo, whoa, and still get a bunch of, where are you really from? Asian eyes, and people yelling at me in a bunch of inaccurate East Asian languages. In my humble opinion, Apu as a stereotype should be addressed as it comes up organically, like this episode that features Apu and is explicitly about immigration and racism. And this episode's commentary would certainly have been lacking in the first generation and people of color perspectives if Shivan hadn't been a part of it. And I agree with Allison, and also Nina left a similar comment, in that if you are not in the dominant, I guess the most powerful race, the most
the majority,
yes,
the racial majority,
white power, is that best, what I want to say?
The best one. Just say no. It, Bob.
Yeah, if you're not in the race that is dominating everybody in your culture, you do not have the option to turn off the conversation about you know.
You exist, and it becomes that part of it, and it's just, I mean, I have gotten to taste a small amount of that poison by being a gay man, but even then, like, that is a separate pain of the closet of being like, well, I don't have to tell people I'm gay. Somebody who outwardly appears different than a white person, they don't have the choice to not tell somebody, to not have to bother having a conversation about it.
That's right.
And yeah, Nell Scovell had a great point too in our interview with her, where she talked about how in her book, she takes a lot of pride in like opening doors for women in the entertainment industry and trying to get more diversity. But she also is like, that's a lot of energy, and I just want to tell jokes. Like, why do I got to do all this shit? But it is society that made her have to do
it. It was necessary, yeah. Believe it or not, it feels like we did this a billion years ago, but we have one episode of Talking Futurama to cover. The last episode, which we did not cover on the last episode of Talk to the Audience.
We recorded, if that's what Jeremy, we recorded that right before you went to Tokyo to tell you how long ago we recorded that one.
So like 6 weeks ago, maybe. But yeah, so I think in our next episode of this, we will start reading questions for What a Cartoon. And we just have too many podcasts going on at once to hit them all. But look forward to that. But this is for Fry in the Slurm Factory, and Jack Christmas says, oh, and just to randomly point something out, Pokemon, the first movie, doesn't literally have a Who's That Pokemon interlude, but it does have a scene where Team Rocket are looking at silhouettes of clone Pokemon on Mewtwo's machine and identifying them as they see them, including the infamous moment where they show a Scyther silhouette and they shout Alakazam. That's probably what Bob's remembering. Yes, I thought there was a Who's That Pokemon segment in the movie, but it was really a reference to that in the movie itself.
I completely forgot that. I haven't seen that movie in a very long time.
I'll tell you, all the six-year-olds and me and my first girlfriend were really yucking it up at that joke.
It infuriated me when they said the wrong Pokemon name. I was like,
they should know.
I remember in that movie, there's the joke, the only time my mom laughed the entire time watching it, I went there with my mom, not a girlfriend.
Can I guess what the joke is?
What?
Is it the Minnesota Vikings
joke? Yeah, it was the Minnesota Vikings.
They made a Minnesota Vikings joke?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a joke about like, oh, we're just like Vikings. And then I think Ash says like, oh, they live in Minnesota or something.
America doesn't exist in this world.
I know.
What are they doing?
I love them getting away with localization jokes like that.
Yeah.
Which normally the Pokemon company would delete and say like, you can't make this shit. But it was early enough that they could just slip that kind of in.
Did you ever watch Lupin on Adult Swim?
No, not on Adult Swim.
It was a weird dub, and they would reference, like, you know, it's a show, they would play the show from the 70s and reference, like, Die Another Day. Like, reference weird recent things. Solomon Mars says, I always enjoy watching this episode, in part because I love Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but also because this is a very alien episode. A lot of Futurama doesn't deal with the fact Earth has had contact with aliens. You mostly only see humans and robots walking around on Earth, but Slurm is a product sold and advertised on Earth, and yet we never see any of those guys walking around. So I'm glad we went off and had fun in an alien-filled episode. The hardest part to watch is Fry craving a can of Slurm and then later continuing to drink the Slurm after the discovery of its secret.
I love how long that goes on.
Yeah.
It's just like
the constant spitting out and the chastising of Fry.
My favorite is when the third time when Leela won't even look at him and just like smacks it out of his hand without looking.
Can you get this last one, Henry?
Yes. Fresher Than says, does anyone else think Slurm is supposed to be Surge from the 90s? I actually found some in a gas station on a road trip a few months ago. I didn't buy, but I've kind of been thinking a lot about it and feel slightly addicted to something I haven't had in 20 years.
Boy, I remember when Surge kicked off in the mid-90s because there were a lot of jokes on Mystery Science Theater about it. I'm just like, Surge! Because that's what the commercial was, like people running at a couch. And this was the era in high schools, for me at least, and this was parodied in a lot of like TV shows in which cola companies were making deals with high schools to get them addicted to their sugar water. Machine. But I remember there was a Surge machine. When Surge kicked off, there was a Surge-specific machine in my high school, and I didn't like it that much. I was a Coke guy then, but now I feel like whenever I have a sip of Mountain Dew, it feels like my kidneys have been kicked in. I want to know what Surge tastes like.
Just I'm like, that way like you guys watch me drink gallons and gallons of Diet Coke, but like regular Coke, the second it touches my mouth, I just feel my body fall apart.
Well, I mean, I don't get it because I drink a lot of I love beer and I love IPAs. It's just like drinking acid, and I feel fine after drinking an IPA. But if I have like a cup of Mountain Dew, I'm just like, oh,
it's so much sugar.
Yeah.
See, I don't drink any soda, so I can't comment on. My brother drank it all the time. For a brief time, my brother was a Dr. Pepper and Mountain Dew kid, but then Surge replaced it for a few years there because it was really just Coke's answer to Mountain Dew because they didn't have a fruit flavored cola.
Was it fruit flavored?
I mean lemon, lime,
whatever fruit Mountain Dew is.
Yeah, whatever that is. I mean it's green, so that would imply fruit.
Yeah, green's a fruit.
Yeah, green's a fruit.
Or it's a vegetable.
I mean, if you're finding it on the road, that is because they re-released it in the 90s nostalgia that's going on now. Like you could buy some cans of it on Amazon. You don't want to, but I mean they also brought back clear Pepsi.
Oof. Don't bring back that gross soda with like the balls floating in it.
Oh yeah,
whatever that is, Sobe or whatever. Is maybe Orbits.
Sobe was like Sobe Life Water, I think it was called.
But it was like 40 grams of sugar in every bottle,
yeah, it was
right?
Like Orbs or Orbits or something. Yeah. And, I remember that.
But definitely, I think in design and selling that there's a bit of Surge in Slurm, though. Slurm's McKenzie is much more of an 80s. We talked all about that. It's Bud Light in that.
It's Bud Light, but yeah. Yeah, thanks for listening, folks, and thanks for another great month of donations and another great month of content, dare I say. Anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
Well, I mean, look forward to not only our stuff coming out of LA, our live show, seeing if we get up to the milestone so we can do a second miniseries this year, but also be sure to check out our Season 7 wrap-ups, which are coming down the line. We're going to be doing the Season 7 wrap-up and the Season 7 deleted scenes, both in audio and video form.
That's a lot of content as we say goodbye to Season 7. Which is up there in my favorites. Boy,
it's been such a great season. Yeah. There's not really
a long season.
Yeah, I think Homerpalooza might be the worst of them, and it's not bad.
Yeah,
it's quite good.
It's a great Talking Simpsons episode, though.
Yes. Yeah, with our good pal Lexi, who, I didn't mention that. Since we recorded that, I got to see her play live. You'd seen her.
I saw her twice, yeah.
Before, yeah, the Y-Axis, they played so close to my home that it would have been an insult to not go. But I also
I would have told her, Henry lives 10 minutes away, let's get him.
Get him.
I'm jealous. I love her band.
Yeah, check out the Y-Axis if you're in the Northern California region. I think they're playing a lot of places this summer around here, so check them out, like a lot of dates. But yeah, great band, great show. We already talked about how it's a very anime music video focused band.
Well, thank you, Matthew, for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Matthew.
You're our first guest.
Yep. Yeah, I'm around. I am Matthew J. Please check out my Patreon at patreon.com/cartoons101. Despite me being here on this on your wonderful Patreon content, I get no money from this enterprise. But I have my own at cartoons101, and you get an exclusive podcast every week. We just wrapped up Conversation on Genesis Evangelion. I will also be in LA soon recording with cool LA guys. I've already done a couple with cool LA guys. I just had two people from the Struggle Session podcast on my show. I'm going to probably talk to the rest of those guys as well. And I, you know, have friends and stuff down there that do comedy, and I love that city. I'm a big fan. I'm glad you guys are going, and I'm going to talk to some. Allie Gertz is one of my favorite people in the world. I love that podcast as well. Both of them. They're both fantastic.
Everybody hates on LA too much. There's good parts of it, too.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful city, and it's every city's full of dirtbags and shitty stuff. And
as long as I'm not driving, I love LA.
I just love being behind the wheel of a car, listening to a podcast. Like, I don't mind traffic, and LA traffic is, like, not that big a deal to me. That's probably why I like it more than a lot of people.
It's mainly the parking. working.
I just love California. Yeah. I'm a big fan of just, when I go to California Adventure, I live in California and I'm still like, look, that's that, that's the Palace of Fine Arts. And my girlfriend's like, that building is, you can see it from our apartment.
But I like the recreation.
Yeah, I like that it's here.
I do love California so much. It's the greatest state.
Yeah, Come here.
Move here and visit us, everybody. But thanks for listening. We'll see you next month for another Talk to the Audience. See you then.